from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The arrest of former San Francisco Public Works Director Mohammed Nuru came as part of a broad and costly federal investigation, complete with undercover agents, confidential informants. Why was all that needed with a man who's so casually and cavalierly engaged in corruption? That's the question Joe Eskenazi tackles in his piece this week titled "Trickle-Down Corruption: Will Local Authorities Ever Prosecute Local Wrongdoing?" And Joe Eskenazi joins me now. Thanks for being on Forum, Joe.
Thank you. I can't believe that was this week. It feels like a long time ago.
I know, and it was just Monday, I believe, that Mohammed Nuru officially resigned as public works director. We also heard that on Wednesday, San Francisco City Attorney Dennis Herrera announced subpoenas against PG&E. I want to get into all of that, but right now there is breaking news potentially that London Breed may have herself been involved with Mohammed Nuru in ways that the public was not aware.
It had been acknowledged to me in the past that they had a personal relationship. It was told to me.
You mean like a romantic one?
Yes. But I was told that it was decades ago. I don't know how much. And this was something that was known to people reporting on things in City Hall. And
is she planning on addressing this publicly?
My understanding is that she will address it right now, today. My understanding is that it will be addressed today.
Well, as soon as we get more information on that, and why did she feel the need to address this at this point? Do you have any sense of that?
I just think sooner or later that you have to address it, considering the situation that Mr. Nuru is in.
Could she have potentially done anything improper as a result?
The way that this was told to me before is that this relationship was in the deep past. So that is why, one can question my journalistic sense, but my sense was that, that was not in and of itself a story.
Well, let's talk about a story of the week, which is that, City Attorney Dennis Herrera announces subpoenas against companies that are deeply intertwined in city life. PG&E, Recology, WebCorp. Mm-hmm. So what's going on there?
Well, it's hard to say with any degree of certainty, but it gets back to what you described and what I described as the casual corruption. We don't know if these companies knew what they were doing, but what was happening was that they were underwriting a lavish, luxurious holiday party by the Public Works Department and other departments. I'm told it was a hot ticket and that lots of city officials dropped by. There are rules about companies that have contracts with the city giving money to the departments that control their contracts. They're looser than you'd think. You have to disclose them, and if it's more than $10,000, you have to have approval from the Board of Supervisors. Neither of those happened here. So it's all part of a kind of a wink-wink, nod-nod thing where people are literally being bought food and booze by companies that are then getting contracts from these departments.
And have you reached out to any of the companies, and have they responded?
Yes. My colleague Julian Mark called all of the companies that were both subpoenaed by City Attorney Dennis Herrera and were on the invoice for this, which is very clear and easy to read, for $33,000 towards this $42,000 party. Two of them did not get back to us. One of them said that they would have to review the invoice, which should have been 5 minutes, but they didn't get back. And then finally, WebCorp said they thought that this was a charitable donation. And in fact, they do have letters that thank them for the charitable donation. And if they are being truthful, it would mean that their charitable donation was then shifted by Nick Bovis and lefties into this party.
Right, because the charitable donation was sent to Lefty O'Doul's Foundation for Kids. Mm-hmm. And of course, we should remind our listeners that these subpoenas stem from the federal corruption charges against Mohammed Nuru and Lefty O'Doul's restaurant owner, Nick Bovis. And can you just remind us what chiefly Nuru and Bovis are accused of?
Well, the way I wrote it was that it was a smorgasbord of rinky-dink corruption, a rinky-dink chicanery. It's the casual nature of the corruption that gets your eye more than their end goals. What they are facing 20 years in prison for is allegedly attempting to bribe an airport commissioner with an envelope stuffed with $5,000 in order to get a chicken shack into SFO, which is not good, but this is not something, it's not a Bond villain plot. It was just the ease and plethora of corruption that caught the eye, because it was a 75-page complaint, and four other quote unquote schemes are there. They're not being charged for time in jail, they're there as a character to show what kind of people these are. And in fact, it's a lower standard of evidence for that. You only need the preponderance of evidence, the 50+1%. You don't need to have it proved beyond a reasonable doubt. That's just there to quite literally to muddy up the defendants.
Well, the tone in your piece about, this chicanery, as you referred to it, was a frustration that this sort of low-level crime is something that city leaders themselves were completely aware of but have been so unwilling to deal with and address, and that it takes, these costly and expansive federal investigations to actually bring these kinds of things to light. To you, what happened with Nuru is the latest from a city government that you describe as run like a cartel. So what do you mean by that?
The city looks out for its own. The city functions very well as a means of advancing its own. And, contrary to Mr. Lincoln's beliefs, honesty is not the best policy. If you want to get ahead, it would help to be able to get up, to know when to get up and leave the room at the very least, or to be, a pliable person. Mr. Nuru had his job in large part because of his ethical lapses, because he could be relied upon to do things that he should not have been asked to do but was being asked to do. And he was very good about that. And so in this case, when we look at you can look at the incredibly exacting nature of how much effort and time and money the FBI has put into trying to pin these rinky-dink charges onto, though the sentence could be very serious, onto Mohammed Nuru and Nick Bovis. And that's because it's very hard to prove quid pro quo. It's very hard to prove bribery because the laws are written to allow politicians and others to have great latitude. And, as I wrote, you might recall the similarly great efforts that the feds went to pin Li Linyi and others with charges like this. It was easier for them to concoct a gun-running scheme to jihadists in the Philippines than to get Li Linyi for simple quid pro quo bribery.
And yes, and I think remind us what Nuru and Bovis potentially face in terms of penalties, because as you
20
said,
years, 20 years is a long time.
Yeah, I mean, they're substantial. And the fact that the FBI, clearly, Nuru wasn't necessarily the target.
No, he was definitely not the target, because you don't spend this much time and money to try and pop a public works director of a mid-level American city for doing the things that he has allegedly been caught doing, not only on phones, but, bank transactions, et cetera. The complaint has a lot of evidence in it that is very hard to brush aside. With that said, it again is not a Bond villain plot. Money is not being diverted. Well, actually, money must divert it from children's charities. But it's very hard to get people for this kind of wrongdoing and requires this kind of sustained effort by with limitless finances from the feds. What's more, the way that federal cases are tried is different than the way that state cases are tried. You have a grand jury. You can apply more leverage and the penalties are more severe. Even if you were to try these in state court, the penalties would be negligible. It wouldn't be worth it. So for someone like Chesa Boudin, who I think for Chesa Boudin, it's not lost on him how much easier it is to nail somebody for stealing a television than it is for wholesale corruption.
And we'll get more into San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Boudin, but I just want to read from Mayor Breed's Medium post, which has just gone online. She writes, "I write in the spirit of transparency because in the wake of a scandal at City Hall, I think San Franciscans are entitled to hear directly from their mayor and also, quite frankly, to dispel some unfortunate rumors that have already begun to circulate. From the perspective of a close personal friend, I was confused and heartbroken. If the charges are true, I can only wonder how could someone give up so much for seemingly so little, endanger one's hard-earned reputation and livelihood, and upend the lives of family, friends, colleagues, and the citizens he served. It was and remains shocking." She writes, "To be clear, I never asked Mohammed Nuru to do anything improper, and he never asked me to do anything improper. I was not aware of the schemes alleged by the FBI until shortly before they became public, and when I was informed, I immediately reported the information to our city attorney." So I want to invite listeners to join this conversation at this point. You're getting a lot of information about the local public corruption scandal engulfing Mohammed Nuru. And I want to get your thoughts and reactions. You can leave them at Facebook, on Twitter. You can email them at forum@kqed.org, or you can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Our guest is Joe Eskenazi. He's editor and columnist at Mission Local and somebody who has closely followed City Hall for some time. Just before I interrupted you, Joe, you were talking about what Chesa Boudin might be able to do in this situation. So first of all, tell us why Chesa Boudin is different from previous district attorneys.
He has no connection to the city family, and that's the term that they openly use at all. Even George Gascon, made attempts to try for corruption, but even George Gascon was appointed by Gavin Newsom, and Gavin Newsom didn't likely come to this idea wholly by himself. We can give George Gascon effort for trying, but it's very hard to try these cases. His office wasn't entirely successful. It takes an inordinate amount of work to get, what you would consider to be, de minimis results.
Yeah. So to that effect, you reported on a sense of reluctance that you got from the office right now to get involved.
Well, it doesn't make sense because this is a very showy way of trying a case that the U.S. attorney has taken. And there are reasons for that that are strategic and otherwise. This got the information out there, and people will read through the complaint, and there are a lot of unnamed characters that have titles like Developer One and Contractor One. And, quite clearly, the U.S. attorney wants people to recognize themselves and come forward. So it's not clear who is going to be charged with what. So if you are Chesa Boudin, there is a limited value in trying to retrace the years of investigation that the U.S. attorney with much more resources has already undertaken and try and bring charges against people who may be, on deck to get charges anyway.
Well, this listener writes, so these crooks get away with all these terrible things. Nuru gets to resign and still get his pension? This is so unfair and goes against all the reasons we have labor unions in the first place. Your reaction?
He doesn't get his pension yet. How that works is that if you are found guilty of a moral turpitude crime, you and then the city acts, you won't get to keep your pension. And, if it's very hard to I don't know what's going to come of this case legally, but if any of the allegations are proven true, it's hard to say that it isn't a moral turpitude crime because it would be profiting off of your position, much like a policeman. In this case, I can think of several cases where policemen took bribes or otherwise, enriched themselves from the job. That's moral turpitude is a nebulous term, but that's the heart of it.
You did quote a San Francisco-based prosecutor about another reason that prosecutors might be hesitant to, quote, muddy up the city family, and that's because they don't want to put themselves on the side of Trump's Department of Justice?
It's very clear what's going on. Now, that multiple things can be true at once. The U.S. attorneys are prosecuting the low-level dope dealers that this city isn't prosecuting. That is good politics for them, but also I imagine, it's just a sense of frustration. a sense of frustration with where their offices are in the city and what's going on. So my understanding is that federal public defenders are very busy defending low-level drug dealers, which is not what usually federal public defenders are often doing. So even this was something that came up during the DA's race. It's very hard to even people who would be inclined to want to take a harder line on overt drug dealing did not want to interject themselves on the side of Trump's DOJ.
Well, let me go to Jeff in San Francisco. Hi, Jeff.
Hey.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Well, the infrastructure projects in San Francisco seem to take forever, like Van Ness is a typical example. Other countries seem to get these projects done at a very quick pace, and this drags on and on. Has this been looked at as anything to do with corruption or some sort of padding of some kind? It just doesn't seem right.
Jeff, thanks for the question. I mean, there are a lot of reasons, as we found out, that infrastructure projects take a long time in this city. But is there a tie to corruption in your view, Joe Eskenazi?
I don't think it's quite as simple as that, though Jeff's suspicion is not paranoid in the least. What I would say is that the complexities of this city's processes lend themselves to corruption. I would say that when you can just calmly say, oh, we'll get a permit expediter, the fact that this is a thing means that you have experts and people who get to cut in line and a process that's so convoluted that there are inefficiencies to be profited off of. So that's what I would say is more the holdup in San Francisco. We have cumbersome processes, and the people who are doing well by them are reluctant to streamline them because that would be ceding their advantage.
Well, let's spend a little time talking about what are some of the proposals to try to get at corruption. Can you talk about what some of the supervisors are suggesting in terms of potential ways to address this? For example, Supervisor Matt Haney says that he'd like a charter amendment to split street cleaning responsibilities from public works.
That could work, but it wouldn't solve the problems that we talked about with cumbersome processes and people who have ins and favored, dealers. That would just be building your foundation atop, wretched soil. Matt Haney's other suggestion is to have an independent prosecutor because he feels that the city attorney is too part and parcel of the city family. Matt Haney is a smart and politically astute and very active supervisor. I think he may run into the city charter, which mandates that only the city attorney can give the supervisors legal advice.
And he's not the only one saying that. I mean, you have Gordon Marr, Hillary Ronan, and Dean Preston also wanting to have a special investigator.
I don't know where this investigator is going to come from, and I don't know what his or her investigative authority will be. Mm-hmm. If he or she demands papers, I don't know what obligation anyone has to turn them over. So I have my questions about that. I think the thought process behind it is solid. I think that, after that you start to run into problems. If you want to call in somebody who can demand with subpoena power your papers, that's one thing. But otherwise it's like the old Robin Williams line about English police: stop or I'll say stop again.
Do you think there needs to be just another oversight body over public work since it is
overseen
slightly? Yes, exactly. So that's what I mean. Like, do you think it needs something like that? I hear arguments of, yes, that's exactly what we need because uniquely it doesn't have one and it's such a major department, but other concerns about just another layer of bureaucracy to try to get at something.
I think both of those can be true. I'm of both minds about that. The fact that you don't have an oversight body is hard to defend right now.
Well, let's go to Jake in Oakland. Hi, Jake. Join us.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just curious if your guest has any opinions on why these city officials are willing to kind of corrupt such a significant amount of money being distributed. I mean, we're talking about contracts that might be worth, hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars, and they're corrupting it for a couple thousand in a donation to a party. It seems disproportionate.
Or potentially for a tractor, or potentially for so many other reasons. Any thoughts for Jake, Joe? Eskenazi?
Well, I mean, the amount of money here to keep in mind, the city spends $1.2 million a year on toilet paper. So always just use that as your baseline. We haven't seen, nothing of what we've seen in the complaint touches on some of the really and truly large contracts the city has for millions or even billions of dollars. I have to hope that the city attorney and the controller are going to be looking at that. Also, not a tremendous, huge contract, but something that I've written about is that the city attorney is looking at the JCDecaux contract for the outdoor toilets and kiosks. Mm-hmm. That's always been a terrible contract. JCDecaux only pays about 6% of its ad revenue to the city. Other vendors pay up to 65%. There have always been allegations that there was whining and dining and sweet talk and political favoritism. And if you look at the RFPs that have been put out, they tend amazingly to be very slanted towards the incumbent that would keep somebody else from coming in and actually giving the city a better deal. Now maybe we have a better understanding of why that was happening. There are a lot of contracts like that. And that one that's a matter of tens of millions of dollars, which still is not an earth-shattering amount of money in San Francisco government or specifically with San Francisco's economy. But it's getting there.
So have you sort of answered your own question about why you think it's so hard? I mean, what's your conclusion to your own question about why local officials don't root out local corruption? I mean, you've talked
I mean, some of it's practical and some of it is cynical. Practically, as I mentioned, the feds are in a much better position to come in and roust this stuff out. They have more resources for these big investigations, and also they can hit you harder in their in their courtroom proceedings. Many people have described what is taking place with Bovis and Nuru now as, quote-unquote, a squeeze play. They're not talking about bunting while the runner leads off third. They're going to go up there and they're going to try and get him to say things and do things. And they already did, because they had a cooperation agreement on him with him, which he allegedly broke. He talked about Fight Club, so to speak. They said, we want you to go help us with this investigation. You can't talk about the investigation. We want you to help us get other people. And he talked to those other people, or talked to people who talked to people. So, you know, that, if you need a million and one reasons why he wasn't the ultimate target, that's another one, right? You wouldn't have a cooperation agreement with him if he was the kingpin and him getting the tractor was the end-all and be-all of a years-long investigation, which it's not. So that's hard. You know, that's a lot of – that's a big effort. Also, you know, as we mentioned, I think it, even if you had the appetite to go after local corruption, it's very hard to do practically. And, you know, San Francisco's DA's office has to make dollars and cents decisions about where to put its personnel. Do you want to put them in anti-corruption, embezzlement, bribery things, or do you want to put them in restorative justice, as Jessica Dean is very big on? Do you want to put them in various things? And so it's a matter of resources, and it's a matter, in the end, you only have so many attorneys.
So will local authorities ever prosecute local wrongdoing? I mean, that is the title of your piece.
Yes, I think that they will. It may not be to everyone's liking. They may be there for the crumbs that fall off the Fed's table. Also, as we've seen, other officials who've been caught on the federal level have been prosecuted locally, such as Ed Jew, such as Julie Lee. I imagine that that Leland Yee may, get a few subpoenas in the mail after he gets back from his federally mandated vacation in Arizona. So we'll see.
We're talking with Joe Eskenazi. He's editor and columnist at Mission Local. He's been covering closely the investigation surrounding former San Francisco Public Works Director Mohammed Nuru. And his piece on Mission Local is called Trickle-Down Corruption: Will Local Authorities Ever Prosecute Local Wrongdoing? This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, you can go to kqed.org. Well, this listener writes, why do all roads lead to Willie Brown? We know that Willie was involved in the appointment of Mohammed Nuru. He hung out with Nick Bovis. He appointed the airport commissioner, and all mayors after him are puppets for slick Willie.
I refrain from thinking of Willie as, a man sitting up high in a tower and stroking a white cat. I think that Willie Brown is, it's hard to ignore the fact that he put lots and lots of people in government, and they remain in government. And among those people are Mohammed Nuru. Among those people were Ed Lee. Among those people were Naomi Kelly, who Nuru allegedly blabbed to and blew the whistle on him. Naomi Kelly's husband, Harlan Kelly, is the head of the PUC. London Breed. We can think of lots and lots of people. So this is a coterie of people, and they are influential. And, you know, I refrain from thinking that Willie Brown is running the show. I think more that he has access to information and leverage.
Mike in San Francisco. Hi, Mike.
Hey, I've got a question. Is there a possibility for citizen oversight through San Francisco's open data or through Freedom of Information Act requests for the contracts that the city holds?
Thanks, Mike.
You can find all these things. There's a lot of amazing things to be found through Freedom of Information Acts and through open data. Some of the articles that have run in the last couple of weeks are fueled by that, such as those that nailed down who paid for what with these parties and all that. Ultimately, I do not think that this data is going to create the narrative that would be required for real action in the city, but it is necessary in order to understand what's going on. People are not outraged, by going through 27 different piles of data and finding that somebody paid for a check and didn't report it on their Form 700. That is important, and I don't want to belittle that, but on the other hand, it's very, very easy to get lost in the weeds very quickly, because this city is actually very good at creating data and is actually more open than most. But it's hard to separate the wheat from the chaff, even if it's all actionable stuff and even if it's all story worthy.
What's the role, or what should the role of the Ethics Commission be in any of this? Do they have a role to play, Joe Eskenazi?
The Ethics Commission could be a lot more toothsome when it comes to enforcement, and always could. And we have to wonder, something that was always complained to me about by Ethics Watchdogs, that the Ethics Commission was captured by the regulated community.
So tell me where you think this is going. We have this 75-page complaint, as you said, lots of threads that can potentially be pulled here, requests from the U.S. attorney to say, hey, turn yourself in if you've got some relationship to any of this. I mean, what do you think we're going to see?
Well, again, there is an incentive for the feds to muddy up San Francisco, and we keep giving them all the mud to throw at us. They could go as far as they want to go.
So you think this emphasis is also just political from the feds because of their hatred of California?
I think that that is an incentive for them to look harder. I think that they're not making things up. They don't have to.
That's where your frustration lies.
No. I mean, if Tucker Carlson wants to come out here and spend, 15 minutes in Soma filming the same guy, doing the same things in the same three blocks, that's actually happening. But, we can get into long digressions about whether that's indicative of how San Francisco is. But,
sure.
You can't say it's not happening.
But anyway, where does this go in your view? What are you watching?
I am watching a lot of things. The FBI walked into the Department of Building Inspection and demanded the records for the building that Mohammed Nuru allegedly, helped to push to make things happen after being plied with liquor and accommodations in China.
Give us a little more background on that, by the way, because there have been some interesting.
The building is owned by a Chinese billionaire, a real estate corporation. On the wiretap, Nuru recounts the luxurious accommodations and gifts he was given, and then later is caught talking on the phone to somebody asking for things to happen. If you look over the computer records in DBI, things were expedited. It seems some of the things didn't get recorded properly, and it seems other things were handled, quote unquote, over the counter that should have required more scrutiny and time. So if you were going to try to make the case that somebody was able to jump the line, it appears that that case could be made. The FBI did go in to look at these records. My understanding is they disappeared off the computer system there and then came back, which is a weird thing to happen.
And the next shoe to drop, you think?
It's hard to say. And that's also why it's hard for Chesa Boudin to read through the footnotes and make a case off of the complaint, because, again, it would be a waste of his time and effort and could be counterproductive, in fact, if he is duplicating the Fed's work and then getting in their way. And he knows this, even though there's political animosity between the DA's office here and the U.S. Attorney's office. They don't want to make trouble here. That's not good for anybody.
Do you sense anything different in terms of the reaction to Mohammed Nuru that tells you that this corruption scandal could be treated differently, that there could be real change emerging from this?
I don't know about real change, but I can tell you that this is not the same as Li Linyi, who was a peripheral player by design. That's how he kept himself ahead of the game, is by, finding a movement and jumping in front of it. And he really wasn't part of the city family. He was on the fringes of various political tribes. Mohammed Nuru is in the middle of many Venn diagrams. He made himself very indispensable to a lot of people, and he is somebody who was put in government 20 years ago, with the coterie of other people I mentioned. If the feds want to pull on this string, they could unravel the sweater. It depends on what he wants to say.
Joe Eskenazi, editor and columnist for Mission Local. Thanks for your dogged reporting on this, Joe. Really appreciate it.
Back to work.
I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum. Stay with us for another hour.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.